You again this morning with thankful hearts, thankful for every one of these men that came out this morning to the meeting, Courage Men. And we just, that alone, just seeing everyone coming through the door is just a huge encouragement to us as we each have our own set of struggles that we're faced with, and we just want to just commit our lives to you. Lord, we just pray for Frank this morning as he shares with us. We just pray that your spirit can be among us, and we know that it is because you have said when there's two or three together, you're there in our midst. We just pray that you can just anoint his tongue and just pray that we have open hearts and we can just commit everything to you. And we just ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Okay, do I have this turned on, Steve? All right, thank you. Well, this morning as I was getting up and leaving the house, my wife said, "So how do you feel when you go speak to a group of men like this?" Ladies always want to know about feelings, right? It's okay to have feelings, right? Yeah. So I had to think a little bit how to answer that question and say, well, I feel humbled and I feel excited. I feel privileged. On the way here, I was listening to a sermon by one of my former students, and came in here and see quite a few former students and still students, I guess, and talking to one of the men here, and remembered that his sister was in one of my classes, and what's she doing? Well, now she's married to a pastor and they live 1,000 miles away. And you know, life is about discipline and about living our lives into other people. Okay? So I trust that's what God's called you to do, no matter what else he's called you to do. If he's called you to be a mechanic or a plumber or a business owner or a farmer, whatever it is, but he's called us to make disciples, okay? And today I'm asked to talk about appropriate discipline. And discipline is about making disciples, okay? They're the same word. Discipline is what makes disciples. And so when you think discipline, you might think punishment or being taken out to the woodshed, or you know, somebody having to stay after school or dock their pay or whatever. But you know what we're really talking about here is discipleship. So Jesus asked us and told us, commanded us, exhorts us to make disciples, and that's what we need to do. Well, I was thinking about the way we really are all disciples and we're all disciplined, and the longer I studied this aspect of this subject, the bigger it got and the more involved it got. I'm not quite sure how to make it, you know, three alliterated points in a poem this morning, but I'll see what I can do. It's not going to come out quite like that. I was thinking about the way discipline has changed over the years, and one of the things about the way we've disciplined our sons especially, people my age were disciplined in many times very harshly. And that harshness caused a reaction. And the reaction is sometimes then my generation did not discipline our children at all. And now we're seeing the fruits of that, okay? So someone has said that history is like a long concrete hallway, and you take a golf club and hit, I don't know how to do that, but you take a ball and hit it down through there, and it bounces from one side to the other, and it doesn't spend much time in the middle, okay? Most of the time, it's bouncing from one side to the other. And it's easy for life to be that way. And as men, you know, it's our task and our responsibility to bring things to center, to keep us on focus. So the world can't do that. And the church isn't always doing such a good job of it either. And we think about the way that sort of discipline has changed. But there are other disciplines also. And for whatever reason, as I was waking up this morning, I thought about J.C. Wanger. Is that a name that means anything to anybody? Okay, John Christian Wanger. Not many hands here. Okay, he was born in 1910 in Honeybrook, and J.C. Wanger became a scholar of the Mennonite Church and a historian, and he was the only man, the plain Mennonite man, who's ever been part, as far as I know, I hope you can correct me on this, who's ever been part of translating the scripture. He was on the NIV, the New International Version translation team, and the question that came to my mind, I thought about this numerous times, but it came fresh to my mind this morning, is do we have anybody today in the conservative Anabaptist world who would be qualified to be part of a world known Bible translation team. Is there anybody like that? I would like to think there is, but I don't know of anybody. So how did he get to that point? He got to that point by a lot of discipline, okay? A lot of discipleship, a lot of study, studying original languages in the Bible, and just intense amounts of study. So J.C. Wenger died in 1995. Never got to meet him. I hoped that I would, but it never happened. So when we think discipline, we don't just want to think, you know, getting paddled or going to bed without supper or something of that sort, but the way everyone is raised, we are all disciplined. We're disciplined to do something. The other thing that came to my mind is, anybody ever hear of Wolf House Movers? Okay, go, more hands on that one than on J.C. Wenger. Okay, apologies to J.C. Wenger here, okay? Well, the man who started that business was one of our neighbors, and very poor people, and one of the hired men that my dad had working on our farm, and when I was just a baby. But, you know, Verling Wolf disciplined himself as a house mover. And recently they moved a silo in Mannheim. Anybody see pictures of the silo? Yeah, they just took a silo right across the, right? How do you do that, you know? It takes a lot of discipline to do that, to learn how to do that and actually do it. Anybody hear about their story about moving a house, moving the Alexander Hamilton house in New York City? I mean, how amazing is this, right? They were told it couldn't be done, and they called these black cat Anabaptists in there, and they said, we can do it, and they did it. They're disciplined, right? It takes a lot of discipline to run the business you're running or the school you're running or even your home. Relationships demand commitment, we sang this morning. Is that right? That takes discipline. It takes discipline in your own life not to click on the wrong stuff and to click on the right stuff. Does it? Discipline is what life is made out of, okay? That's what life is made of, and we need to think about what that means, okay? And this could get very long, but I hope to pull it together. Today, I'm seeing children who are not disciplined. Anybody noticing this? I'm seeing children who defy their parents, don't respond. I mean, why are we having school shootings? Why are we having the problems we're having even in our own Mennonite schools? Plenty of problems. Well, appropriate discipline, and when we talk about appropriate discipline, we mean matching the discipline to the person and the situation. Appropriate discipline is discipline that produces disciples. So with your own children, with your employees, with people you work with, if you're a school teacher, as some of you are, what we're trying to do is produce disciples. And a disciple is somebody who knows how to do something because they have been disciplined in that area. So if what you're doing is causing anger, then it's not appropriate discipline. If what you're doing is producing no results at all, it's not appropriate. And it's that, it's got some random thoughts here as we're getting started. One of the things we need to think about is that we bring external discipline on a child so as to produce internal discipline. So appropriate discipline is discipline that comes from outside, because every child is born with a bent to sin. Is that right? You, me, everybody. Okay, and somehow that needs to be corrected. And so the external discipline that comes into that child's life is supposed to produce internal discipline, which is then called discipleship. Discipleship and discipline is there are two types here. As I said, some random thoughts getting started here. Discipline must be directive, and then discipline must be corrective. Thinking about your children, maybe your grandchildren, people you work with, discipline has to be directive. In other words, we need to show people how to do things so people can learn how. A child doesn't know how to ride a bicycle, right? And so we help the child learn how to ride a bicycle. It's directive. We teach them, we show them, and so on. But it's also corrective. We have to explain where they've done wrong. When they're doing things that aren't right, we've got to get in there and say, wait a minute, what you did is not going to work very well. I think I was 13 when my grandpa was so busy, and he said, I need somebody to rake hay today. Of course, I was ready to get on the tractor. I knew exactly how to do it, right? And so he went with me the first round, And he said, so what if you'd have to stop this tractor quickly, right? This was a Farmall H. Anybody remember 27 horsepower? Okay. All right, maybe 24, I don't know. And I hit the clutch and the brake, and he almost fell off. He said, I didn't say do it. I said, what would you do if you had to do it? But he discovered I knew how to do that, right? But, you know, the first time you rake hay, and I know we don't rake hay anymore, but my windrows weren't exactly straight, you know, and Grandpa liked them straight. So he said, well, since you don't know how to make straight windrows, we'll teach you how to make straight windrows. How about you drive the tractor for baling, and then you'll find out how much fun it is to follow all those crooked windrows you're making all over the field. So he gave me some direction, but he also gave me some correction. Okay, so I learned how to do things the right way and the way he wants them done. So our most pressing task in life is to make disciples of our children, first of all, of the people around us, and the discipline we do must be for the purpose of blessing those people. Do you ever see anybody who disciplines a child for the purpose of making the parents look good? Anybody ever know that? Yeah, I remember walking into a house trying to collect some rent, and all of a sudden, the mom is screaming at the children and do this and don't do that and so on. But I noticed that they had crayon all over the wall. So there are times when she doesn't scream at them, right? You know, she just lets them do whatever they want to do. But as soon as I walk in the house, all of a sudden there's going to be discipline right here, right now. Does that work? Anybody know? No, wait, that doesn't work. So we have to be so careful as parents, especially, that we don't just discipline the child so we look good. The discipline has to be geared to make the child obey and become a disciple. So we want to be careful that we're thinking correctly about this. It needs to be for building character. It needs to be for self-respect. Discipline should produce significance, security, confidence. And as we do that, we should see that sort of grow into their lives. So the task of discipline is to create disciples. But, you know, people are not all the same, are they? Are children all the same? Maybe you're all parents. And all. Well, my mom told me that I caused her more trouble than my brothers put together. So I guess, you know, they were better boys than I was. And I guess she wanted to make sure I knew that. So she told me that. And as I was thinking about this, and I have this idea in the back of my head to do this in a class sometime. I've never done it. We all, as men, we all work with metal somewhere along the way, right? Some children are like sheet metal. Take a break, put them this way, it stays. Solder the joints, right? Everything, this works. Whatever you do, it works, right? And some children are like mild steel, you know? Some of them are like big, heavy pieces, and some are little, tiny pieces. And with those kinds of people, you know, what I think about is if you can make that steel warm, you don't have to hit it with a big hammer, right? You know what? You all work with steel, right? You warm it up, tap it in place, right? And if you can get a child's heart warmed up to truth and warmed up to you, you don't have to hit them with a big hammer. You hit them with a little hammer and just tap it in place gently. But it takes a lot of energy to do that. And it's easier to just get out the 4-pound hand sledge, right, and put things in place. But it doesn't work so well. But then some children, like me, are like spring steel, right? What do you do with that stuff? Right? You push it too far and it snaps, right? And so I had the privilege along the way of watching some blacksmiths operate, taking some big heavy truck springs, right? And they've got to do things with these springs. And they learn how to quench it, sometimes in water, sometimes in oil. Do you know what I'm talking about? Maybe some of you know how to do it. I don't know how to do that. But you get a child like that, you've got to be right there. And you've got to be careful. And you take the temper out of that child and you'll destroy the child. Then you've got to get the temper back in by quenching it the right way. And I wish I could explain that better. But we're different, and the children are different. And we have to think about how different they are. And they have different kinds of needs. And so the right amount of heat, the right amount of bending in the right place, take those teachable opportunities to shape the life when the heart's warm, the child's listening. We just had the privilege of having some grandchildren with us for a few days. And, you know, now I have the opportunity to shape those lives. Take time. Lay down on the floor. You know, we were playing checkers. My 5-year-old grandson and I are playing checkers. Well, he thought sometimes it worked better if he got 2 moves in between mine. You know, it would work a lot better. Well, the first game I allowed him to do that, but then the second game I said, you know, there are some rules here. Let's see if we can learn the rules. How about just, oh, did you move one or two? Yeah, okay, well. And so we're learning how to play the game, and that's what's going to. And Grandma doesn't like when they walk in the house and they kick off their shoes, you know, and then their coats, and there's a trail. You can trace them right to where they're going. And so Grandma took them aside and says, you know, at this house, here's how we do this. And so take those teachable opportunities, because we need to do that. All right, so how do we discipline our children? Well, one way, and if this goes to your handout, so thanks to Jason for making handouts again, breaking the will and not the spirit. It's so important. Everybody have a handout? Okay, if you don't, put your hand up and somebody will get your hand up. Okay, everybody else is covered here. As I've been working with people over the years, and I know some of you do that too, we have a spirit, and a spirit is way down inside of you, or no surgeon would ever find it. But that's the real you, and that's the you that you really in most places can't change. That's a part of you that relates to God, and we have to be so careful that we don't injure the spirit of a child, because the spirit of a child is a part of them. Maybe it's the color of their hair. Maybe it's their size. Maybe it's because they're not able to do some things. Maybe they're overweight or underweight or short or tall or something. And when people are addressed in that way, for example, I just trying to think of some examples here. And I remember one girl we were working with, and her father told her she's not pretty. Can you imagine that? A father not thinking his daughter's pretty? Did that hit her spirit? Uh-huh. That won't ever go away. And so as counselors and families and people work, the idea is to try and bring that spirit back to life again. Okay? That spirit's been crushed. Or a boy who maybe at school, he's the last one picked when we're playing ball. You know what I mean? And he hears somebody say, this guy's an automatic out. Don't pick him. Do you ever hear this? No? Nobody wants to talk about that one. Okay. That hits you at the level of the spirit. Okay? And it's so important that we don't crush that spirit. But we also have a will, and the will is the part that is defiant. The will is the part that's defiant. And as I was working with my grandchildren over this last week, they were staying at our house for a couple of days, and I said, well, we played bat and ball for a while, now you've got to pick them up. Well, they didn't want to pick them up. That's the will, okay? So we need to address the will and say, yes, we are, I will help you, but we're going to do that. So as we're disciplining people, we want to make sure that the will gets broken, but the spirit does not get crushed. So if you can take a look at these four options, and I'm not saying these are the only options, but number one, a child who becomes an adult with an unbroken will and an unbroken spirit. In that child, the spirit is inoperative and not controlled by God or man. The will is uncontrolled and uncontrollable except by extreme measures. The body's out of control and not controllable. These people will just literally defile you or defy you. A self-willed life causing trouble for self and others. The will's not broken. The spirit is not broken. This person has never been discipled. This person has never had real discipline. You're going to have a lot of trouble working with that kind of a person. Number two, an unbroken will and a broken spirit. The spirit is inoperative and not controlled by goodness. The will is not controlled by anyone or anything. The body's out of control except by extreme measures. You get a dangerous, defiant life, harmful to self and others. This is what we're seeing basically out there in the world, okay? And too many times in our churches. You're getting an unbroken will because there are no fathers involved, and people are growing up without fathers and without grandfathers and without good role models. And so the will never gets broken. And so these people are going to do what they're going to do, when they're going to do it, for whatever reason they want to do it. But the spirit has been crushed. The spirit has been broken. Because there was nobody there loving them, caring for them, nurturing them. And so they don't even have a conscience. They'll just do anything at all. And it's like, you can't touch me. You can't do anything to me. Okay? This will destroy society. Number three, a broken will and a broken spirit. The spirit is crushed and floundering. unable to contact God without help. The will is crushed and unresponsive without a healthy spirit to guide it. The body is variously undisciplined and out of control. You get a troubled, painful life of shame, unable to connect with self and others. Working with people like that is a real challenge, is a real struggle, because you get a situation where the will has been broken and the spirit has been crushed. And these people are almost impossible to contact. I mean, I remember working with a number of people like this, and you kind of try and find their eyes. You know, they're just staring, and you try to get where they're looking at you. Try and talk to them about what's happening in their life. And just getting them to respond is almost impossible because they're just crushed. Number four, a broken will and an unbroken spirit. This is God's plan for you, for your children, for whoever you're working with. A broken will and an unbroken spirit. The spirit is controlled by God and holy desires. So the desire of the heart is right. The longing of the heart is for goodness, for purity, for holiness, for righteousness, for discipline. The will is controlled by discipline in God. We all need our wills to be controlled. We need our wills to be disciplined. The body is controlled by disciplines and holy desires and the nurtured spirit. A beautiful life controlled by a sensitive spirit, an obedient will, and a disciplined body. And so what we need to do as we're creating disciples, as we're disciplining people, we need to make sure that we are breaking the will and protecting the spirit. And it's not an easy task to do that. Some strong-willed people, like me, you know, I needed a lot of discipline. Some soft-hearted people need lots of care and little discipline. I remember one father said his oldest son, he had to paddle him every day. His youngest son, all he had to do was look at him, and the boy melted, okay? Didn't have to paddle him at all. Now, I think those are probably extreme statements, but we are very different, and we want to make sure that we are using the right approach on the right child. Use the wrong approach on the wrong child, you're going to injure the child. Okay, same thing with employees. People that work with you, work for you, teachers, some of them just have to be, you've got to look at them right in the eye and say, you know, didn't we talk about this before? Okay, and some people, you can just nurture them a little bit, and they respond beautifully. So in creating the discipline, we want to make sure that we do not tolerate defiance, that we require obedience, but at the same time, we work with them, showing them how to live. All right, so the second point, first point was breaking the will and protecting the spirit. The second point is by example, and by example, we need to show children how to live. Anybody read Plain News from Ernest Eby puts it out there? I don't know. Okay, good. So good advice on there. Every now and then he has on there some tips for how to be safe. Did you notice those? On how to be safe. For example, one of them he had on recently was high-pressure water. You know, you might have a child take a garden hose and spray another child, and it's just fun, right? But what if they take a high-pressure washer and spray another child at close range? What? Does the child know that? You see? And so as we're disciplining a child, as they're growing up, we have to give illustrations and things we don't even think about. So you're pressure washing something on the farm or in the business, and the child's there, maybe 7, 8, 10, and can I do that? Well, sure, but you got to shout. I remember one time I put water into my finger with a high-pressure hose. That's kind of dangerous and painful at the same time, and it can actually be lethal, depending on what's in that water. And so there's so many things. We have to think for the child. Think for the child, because they don't know those things. They don't know that's going to happen. And so we want to show that there's some results of dangerous behaviors that the child could not perceive. Things like farm equipment, any kind of equipment. I remember when I started driving truck, and I was going to change some tires, and these tires had wedges around all the way around them with lug nuts on. I took all the lug nuts off, and the tire still wouldn't come up. The wheel wouldn't come off. I'm bumping around here, and an older mechanic came up and said, put the lug nuts back on, okay? He said, you get one of those things fly off, it's going to hit you in the leg and break your leg, right? I didn't know that. I never did that before. Somebody had to tell me, or I could have been killed, you know, if I'd been down on my knees and the thing hit me in the forehead. we have to think for the child, think for the people who don't know. Guns, knives, right? All those kinds of things that are normal in many of our homes. I remember having a pair of engineer boots on. I'm not sure how I got them. I must have talked really nice to my parents or something with those black boots that didn't have, you know what I'm talking about. Okay. And my dad had a really sharp hatchet, and I was out cutting some trees for whatever reason. And I swung that hatchet, and it came right up across the arch of my foot, and it sliced that engineer boot right open, but never touched my skin. Now, what kind of a miracle was that, you know? I learned really quickly, you know, that could have been pretty dangerous. That could have been very painful. But nobody told me, of course, you know, how would they know I'm out there with a hatchet? So equipment, electricity, I probably wasn't supposed to have the hatchet, right? Water. Water's dangerous, right? I mean, we have drownings every year. What about spring brakes on big trucks, right? I had a friend who just took one apart, and, you know, he wound up with a plate in his wrist. Okay, those things aren't made to be taken apart like that. Think about girls in the kitchen. You know, you turn the mixer off before you pull it up. Our girls one day pulled it up before they turned it off, and we decorated the kitchen with chocolate icing, right? So they don't know that, you know, and then you can't run in there and scream at them and say, what do you think you're doing? Somebody wasn't telling them what needed to be done. And so it's important that we think for the child. You know, we have some vegetable packing equipment, and I made a rule that any girls who work there have to have their hair up. And some of them think I'm just trying to turn them into Amish girls or something. But, you know, every year there are some girls with pigtails and ponytails who something falls under a piece of machinery and they go for it, not thinking about the pulleys and belts and chains that are down there. And you know, we probably can't get it turned off in time. And so there are things we have to explain to children, so on. Worldly behaviors, pornography, movies, YouTube. You know, my little grandchildren like to watch cats and dogs on YouTube and John Deere tractors. But they see the things on the other options too, right? And I have to think for them. And I say, what's that? And I say, you know what? There's bad things out there. And we're here, we're looking at tractors. We're not looking at things that are bad. Okay? We have to think for them and help them see that these things are wrong. This is just a process of the discipleship. Okay. What about corporal punishment? We talked about that a little bit last time. Corporal punishment is something that the Bible tells us is important. You know, use the rod on the child. That's important. I think it is important. I think it's important that we do that. But at the same time, we want to make sure the child understands exactly what's going on. Look, these are things you may do. These are things you may not do. You know, we had a line on the driveway. You don't take your tricycle out past that line. If you do, you're going to be punished. Why? It's pretty dangerous out there on the road, right? Pretty safe on the driveway, not so safe on the road. And so that would require some corporal punishment. Why? Because we're trying to build protection into the life of the child. And so I try to be very, very careful about this. Warn the child, if you do this, you're going to be punished. And then what kind of punishment do we get? This should always be done in private. Make sure the child knows what they did wrong. They need to know before the fact. Don't just grab them in anger and start shaking them or something of that sort. It's so easy to do that, right? What are they thinking about? What are they doing? You know. And sometimes you have to grab a child if they're going to do something that could be dangerous to their life. But at the same time, we want to provide corporal discipline for them that is going to sting but not hurt the child, not produce injury. And many children have been injured in the past by the extremes and harsh discipline. So I got a little paint stirrer. You know those little paint stirrers that you get with every gallon of paint, you know? Okay? And they sting really badly, okay? But they don't cause injury. You're not going to injure a child with that, not very quickly. And so I would say, you know, what you did is cause for 3 smacks and take them in another room. And, of course, it wasn't fun for them or me, but that's how we did it. And it seemed to be fairly effective. I'm really opposed to paddling children by hand. If you're doing that, I don't know how you're doing things. I think a hand is for affection and love and care. And so you get these situations where, and this was something a mother told me, they took in a foster child, and his foster child had been abused. And this mother and this girl, I think maybe 10 or 11, were working at the kitchen table, and the mother raised her hand for something, and this girl went flying across the kitchen. Why? Afraid of the hand. Because, and this mother was only woken up at that point. Oh my goodness, is that really what that child has experienced? That a raised hand means you're going to get hurt, okay? Somehow we have to diffuse that in people we're working with, okay? We have to not cause that in a child. So just a few comments there about corporal punishment. I want to turn to Luke chapter 22. Another way of discipline is just looking at the child. And I thought about Jesus in Luke 22. And this is the time when Peter is warming himself at the enemy's fire, right? And he's denying Jesus. And along comes Jesus, and in verse 61, and the Lord turned and looked upon Peter. And then Peter remembered. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. All it was a look. Can you change a child by looking at the child? You should be able to. Psalm 32, I'm not going to turn to it or read it. But in Psalm 32, we're told, don't be like a horse or a mule that has to be controlled by a bit and a bridle. But God says, I will guide you with my eye. Sometimes it only takes a very gentle reproof. And I remember, two little stories here. One you won't believe, and the other one you will. So there was I'm sure Jason will remember, Mr. Crespi in school. He was the junior high principal. And some of us had a bad habit on the last day of school. I wouldn't tell this while I was still a principal at school, but now I'm not anymore. So last day of school, we put a plastic bag in our pocket and put a water gun in there. And, it's a plastic bag, so you can't be told by, given away by the water leaking out of your water gun. So we knew how to do this. We had it down, right? So I decided I needed to shoot somebody, so I did. But I wasn't walking circumspectly, and somebody with a big hand was behind me, and I was soon in the principal's office. Okay. And there was a bench in there, and there were a line of boys there, and I was the last one. And it was the last day of school. Now, of course, we had no conception of what, it's like for the principal on the last day of school. Of course, 40 years later, I would discover that. But it didn't help me then. So. And he was lining everybody up. And you knew he had other things to do, right? And now he's got this bench full of naughty boys. And all the punishments he dished out. And I'm sitting there listening, wondering what's going to happen to me. So when he got to me, there was nobody else in the room. And he took my water gun and he threw it in the waste can and he put his foot in there. And those, anybody remember those big old steel green waste cans that public schools had? And he put his foot in there and smashed my nice water gun. And he said, get out of here. That was it. That was it. And that was the end of it. And I thought about that many times as an administrator, to be wise. He could have destroyed me. Could have. That was back in the days when students had no rights. You couldn't call your mom and say, come in here and beat up the principal. She'd have come in there and beat up me, right? Students had no rights those days. Today, of course, you can't do that. I remember on the last day of school one time when I was the principal of school, and there was a boy, respectable young man, who was doing some really, really stupid things, and I caught his eye. That's all he did. And he stopped. Why? Because I had his heart. And sometimes when he sees me, he says, I remember that day. He's a husband. He's a father. He's a church leader. I probably could have destroyed him. Be so careful how you discipline people. Sometimes Jesus just looked at Peter. And Peter cried. Doesn't always work. I mean, he knew Peter's heart. So that eye contact is so, so important. Sometimes we need to hold people accountable. Joseph to his brothers in Genesis 45. I'm Joseph. He didn't stop with that. I'm Joseph whom you sold, right? Sometimes you have to hold people accountable. It's okay to say, hey, you know, what you did was wrong. That's okay. That's not wrong. Not wrong. Refusal of blessing. God to Moses for disobedience. Sometimes the discipline means we have to refuse a blessing. My wife had a plan of discipline for our children. You make the bed before you go to school. If your bed's not made, no dessert for supper. Didn't happen very often. Okay. Pretty hard to leave the table when everybody else is eating pie and ice cream, right? That helps us remember to fix the bed. Okay, so there are things that we can do that are not harmful, but they still got supper, you understand, but not dessert. I want to be careful about withholding food. It's just a side note here. We get people with eating disorders. Sometimes those are caused by manipulating food. And so food gets connected somehow to discipline. We don't want to do that. Now, dessert's a different subject. Okay, you know, we don't need the dessert. But, you know, the mashed potatoes and gravy, you know, we need those kinds of things. So we want to be careful that we don't cause eating disorders because it can happen. Okay, be careful. Hold them accountable. Give them responsibility. We had a chart on the wall with the children's names, and you feed the dog, do the dishes, set the table, pack the lunches. All you had to do was open the cupboard door, and there it was, and you knew exactly what your job was. Nobody had to tell you. You know, it can work really, really well to do that. Okay, work with the child, show the process, have a good time. Wisdom is to know when to use your power and when not to use your power. That's what we need. We need that wisdom to know when. The principal could not have done what he did with me while those other boys were sitting there, because they got some strict punishment. He knew I was not a troublemaker. He knew I just did something stupid, and it was time to give me the word. And so it's so important. We need gentle rebukes. We need stern rebukes. So I'd like to look at 1 Thessalonians 5 now, starting reading at verse 14. What about in the church? We have ways of disciplining people in the church. This 1 Thessalonians 5, beginning at 14, says words like this. Now we exhort you, brethren, listen to the way he's talking about the way you work with different kinds of people in the church. Now we exhort you, brethren, 1 Thessalonians 5:14, warn them that are unruly. Are some people unruly? What are you supposed to do? Comfort the feeble-minded. Some people, it's King James language, but some people are so soft of heart, and they're just kind of, their spirit's been crushed. Well, they need to be comforted. They don't need to be warned. They need to be comforted. Okay? Support the weak. There are people who struggle, and they need to be supported. Get in there. Give an encouraging word. Be patient toward everyone. See that none render evil for evil unto any man. There are people in our churches rendering evil for evil. He's telling you here, don't let it happen. Don't let that happen. That's wrong. Don't let it happen at home. Don't let it happen at school. Don't let it happen at church. Very, very important words. See that nobody renders evil for evil. And when it happens, call them down. If you're in responsibility, if you're in charge, call that person to account. Make sure. 1 Thessalonians 5. Wisdom is knowing which rules to break. Did Jesus break any rules? He was eating grain and harvesting it and eating it on the Sabbath day. And Jesus said to those who complained, don't you remember David who, when he was hungry, went into the, got the showbread and ate it? Remember the story? Yeah. You know, there is the letter of the law, but there's also the spirit of the law. I want to make sure that we're not keeping. You can sometimes keep the letter of the law and violate the spirit. You know, it's Sunday, so I can't help you, right? Wait a minute. You know, that's not exactly what God told us to do. Many people could have been destroyed by too much discipline, so we want to make sure that we don't do that. Okay. Moving on to children a little bit more. Too heavy a load for the size of the child. Be really careful. And, you know, the illustration I use here, which you've probably heard me use before, is if you ask a 3-year-old child to carry a pitcher of milk from the refrigerator to the table, what's probably going to happen? Probably not going to make it, right? And then especially if you say to the child, now just look what you did. Can you imagine this happening? Ever seen it happen? Maybe it happened to you. But the child was not old enough, was not prepared, was not capable of the task. And sometimes we put people in tasks as adults where they're not capable. And that doesn't work very well. And we get this many times in families that struggle. You'll get a father who talks to his daughter about mom. Or you get a mom who talks to her son about dad. Is that child prepared to carry that load? Nope. Not prepared to carry the load. And when you do that, you're putting too much of a load on the child. So be careful. You know, as fathers, we love our daughters, and sometimes we get a little bit on the outs with mom, right? And we go talk to our girls about it. No, don't ever do that. And moms will talk to their sons. I know about that. But they're not made to carry that load. So don't put a load on the child that's too heavy. Work together. Work as a family. Canning, freezing the lawn so the child gets a sense of a satisfaction of a job well done. Moving on then to with time. Harsh discipline cannot replace meaningful time spent with your child. It won't work. You know, when many times we're not spending enough time with the child. You come home from work, we're tired, right? Anybody out there? We don't need mom unloading the truck on us about, here's what happened today, right? She's got this list, right? You need to take care of Junior, and you need to talk to Susie, and you need, you know, the lawnmower wouldn't start, and that's just what we want to hear, right? Well, that's what it means to be a man. That's what it means to be a man who needs to discipline his life. You know, so on the way home, whether it's just walking from the barn to the house or whether it's driving 20 miles or whatever it is, get the past out of your mind and get ready to be dad and husband at home. You know, I've learned that when I walk in the house, I need to sit down. Lois is working in the kitchen. I need to ask her how her day was. I need to find out what happened. I need to find out things went well or didn't go so well. And, you know, that's the time that we need to spend with our families. Okay? Moving on to another point here with your approval. I know Jason talks about this a great deal. From Numbers 6, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, this is pretty important, and he introduces this with three lines. Okay? The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, this is the way you shall bless the children of Israel, saying, now he's ready to tell you what to do. The Lord bless you and keep you. Do you say that to your children? Do you say that to your wife? Do you say it to your employees? Do you say it to the people you work with? Do you say it to your sister? I remember working with a family for a couple of years, and I only had one assignment for them, and that was to bless each other. Every day, in a short sentence, bless mom, bless dad, dad, bless mom, a short sentence to every child. Each of the children needs a short sentence of blessing. They couldn't do it. Did not do it. What do you think the home is like? Can't do it. And this is strictly straight from the scripture. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. May his face shine upon you. When we meet people, you meet people like we talked about on that handout sheet, people with a crushed spirit, how do you deal with them? You know, the way I like to do is when I see them, say, hi, George, it's good to see you, right? So they see the light in my eyes that they caused. Can you do that with your children? When you come home and dad's, you know, getting tackled by the 4-year-old and the 6-year-old and so on, right? Can you say, hey, Susie, so glad to see you, right? Can the light of your eyes reflect that child? If you do, it puts value into their life. It puts value into who they are. Okay? It gives them worth. It gives them a sense of worth. And it's so important that we do that. Our children and our family and our friends need that kind of blessing. We bless others with the blessing we receive. So we greet these little children with a welcoming face of acceptance. And if that doesn't happen, they grow up with a love deficit. And now they're trying to pull love out of everybody. Okay? And so even within the fellowship, maybe within your small group at the end of the session here this morning, can you show delight in your eyes that somebody else caused. Does that make sense? Okay. Do it for your children. Do it for your sister. Do it for your wife if you're married, your grandchildren. When somebody sees you and they get a smile, what does it do to you? Well, how does that change your life? Does it change your life? All of a sudden, you have value. You have worth. And that's part of discipline. Discipline isn't all just lining people up and barking orders. We want to be careful that we do that. Okay, well, bringing this to a close here, like I said, as the longer I studied this, the more the more involved I saw it was. And I'm not asking for more sessions. I'm asking you to go home and develop this. Okay. So the fifth point was the results of appropriate discipline. You get children with a life of usefulness, contentment, submission, ability to lead or to follow, and joy in that life. The last point then, the results of no discipline or lack of discipline. We get so many attachment disorders, and if you don't have discipline, if the discipline does not result in personal discipline, we're in serious trouble. Okay? And in many cases, we really are in serious trouble. The Bible predicts lawlessness in the last days, and we're there. We are there. You notice anything on the news that would indicate anything like that? Yeah. Discipline, remember, is directive and corrective. Discipline provides the capacity to grow and learn. Disciples are people who are followers who also become leaders. Well, many more things could be said, but it's time to bring this to a close. So let's ask the Lord to bless what we've learned today. Dear Father, I thank you so very much that we can meet this way this morning. I want to thank you for each man here, for the responsibilities and opportunities that you've given to him. Thank you for his life. I ask that you'll bless him with the light of your countenance so that he can see the joy that he brings to your heart. And then may he have the strength to bring joy to the hearts of his family, his children, all those he interacts with. I ask for the grace to be able to do that and for your name to be honored and for the way you have disciplined us by your love and by your care and by your holding us accountable. I trust that this will be the journey that each of these men experiences today and throughout the rest of their lives. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you, Frank, for them teachings again this morning. Really appreciate it. We'd like to do a short Q&A. What I'd like to do is, if anybody has a question, I'll bring the mic out to you. Ask Frank can have an answer for you. So if anyone has anything, just raise their hand. I'll bring the mic out before we go to small group.